Chapter 70. Strange news of Uncle Sol. Captain Cuttle, though no sluggard, did not turn out so early on the morning after he had seen Sol Gills through the shop window, writing in the parlor with the midshipman upon the counter, and Rob the grinder making up his bed below it, but that the clock struck six as he raised himself on his elbow and took a survey of his little chamber. The captain's eyes must have done severe duty, if he usually opened them as wide on awaking as he did that morning, and were but roughly rewarded for their vigilance, if he generally rubbed them half as hard. But the occasion was no common one, for Rob the grinder had certainly never stood in the doorway of Captain Cuttle's room before, and in it he stood then, panting at the captain, with a flushed and tousled air of bed about him, that greatly heightened both his color and expression. "Holloa!" roared the captain. "What's the matter?" Before Rob could stammer a word in answer, Captain Cuttle turned out, all in a heap, and covered the boy's mouth with his hand. "Steady, my lad," said the captain, "don't ye speak a word to me as yet." The captain, looking at his visitor in great consternation, gently shouldered him into the next room, after laying this injunction upon him, and disappearing for a few moments, forthwith returned in the blue suit, holding up his hand in token of the injunction not yet being taken off. Captain Cuttle walked up to the cupboard, and poured himself out a dram, a counterpart of which he handed to the messenger. The captain then stood himself up in a corner, against the wall, as if to forestall the possibility of being knocked backwards by the communication that was to be made to him, and having swallowed his liquor, with his eyes fixed on the messenger, and his face as pale as his face could be, requested him to heave ahead. "Do you mean, tell you, Captain?" asked Rob, who had been greatly impressed by these precautions. Said the captain. "Well, sir," said Rob, "I ain't got much to tell. But look here." Rob produced a bundle of keys. The captain surveyed them, remained in his corner, and surveyed the messenger. "And look here," pursued Rob. The boy produced a sealed packet, which Captain Cuttle stared at as he had stared at the keys. "When I woke this morning, Captain," said Rob, "which was about a quarter after five, I found these on my pillow. The shop door was unbolted and unlocked, and Mr. Gill's gone." roared the captain. "Flowed, sir," returned Rob. The captain's voice was so tremendous, and he came out of his corner with such way on him, that Rob retreated before him into another corner, holding out the keys and packet, to prevent himself from being run down. "For Captain Cuttle, sir," cried Rob, "is on the keys, and on the packet too. Upon my word and honor, Captain Cuttle, I don't know anything more about it. I wish I may die if I do. Here's a situation for a lad that's just got a situation," cried the unfortunate grinder, screwing his cuff into his face. "His master bolted with his place, and him blamed for it." These lamentations had reference to Captain Cuttle's gaze, or rather glare, which was full of vague suspicions, threatenings, and denunciations. Taking the proffered packet from his hand, the captain opened it, and read as follows. "My dear Ned Cuttle, enclosed is my will." The captain turned it over, with a doubtful look, and "Testament, where's the testament?" Said the captain, instantly impeaching the ill-fated grinder. "What have you done with that, my lad?" "I never see it," whimpered Rob. "Don't keep on suspecting an innocent lad, Captain. I never touched the testament." Captain Cuttle shook his head, implying that somebody must be made answerable for it, and gravely proceeded. which don't break open for a year, or until you have decisive intelligence of my dear Walter, who is dear to you, Ned too, I am sure. Apostrophe the captain paused, and shook his head in some emotion. Then, as a re-establishment of his dignity in this trying position, looked with exceeding sternness at the grinder. If you should never hear of me, or see me more, Ned, remember an old friend as he will remember you to the last kindly, and at least until the period I have mentioned has expired, keep a home in the old place for Walter. There are no debts, the loan from Dombey's house is paid off, and all my keys I send with this. Keep this quiet, and make no inquiry for me, it is useless. So no more, dear Ned, from your true friend, Solomon Gills. Apostrophe the captain took a long breath, and then read these words written below. The boy Rob, well recommended, as I told you, from Dombey's house. If all else should come to the hammer, take care, Ned, of the little midshipman. Apostrophe, to convey to posterity any idea of the manner in which the captain, after turning this letter over, and reading it a score of times, sat down in his chair, and held a court-martial on the subject in his own mind, would require the united genius of all the great men, who, discarding their own untoward days, have determined to go down to posterity, and have never got there. At first the captain was too much confounded, and distressed to think of anything but the letter itself, and even when his thoughts began to glance upon the various attendant facts, they might, perhaps, as well have occupied themselves with their former theme, for any light they reflected on them. In this state of mind, Captain Cuttle, having the grinder before the court, and no one else, found it a great relief to decide, generally, that he was an object of suspicion, which the captain so clearly expressed in his visage, that Rob remonstrated. Oh, don't, Captain! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the grinder. I wonder how you can. What have I done to be looked at, like that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, my lad, apostrophe, said Captain Cuttle, don't you sing out afore you're hurt. And don't you commit yourself, whatever you do. Apostrophe, I haven't been and committed nothing, Captain. Apostrophe, apostrophe, answered Rob. Keep her free, then, apostrophe, said the captain, impressively, and ride easy. With a deep sense of the responsibility imposed upon him, and the necessity of thoroughly fathoming this mysterious affair as became a man in his relations with the parties, Captain Cuttle resolved to go down, and examine the premises, and to keep the grinder with him. Considering that youth, as under arrest at present, the captain was in some doubt, whether it might not be expedient to handcuff him, or tie his ankles together, or attach a weight to his legs. But not being clear, as to the legality of such formalities, the captain decided merely to hold him by the shoulder all the way, and knock him down, if he made any objection. However, he made none, and consequently got to the instrument maker's house without being placed under any more stringent restraint. As the shutters were not yet taken down, the captain's first care was to have the shop opened, and when the daylight was freely admitted, he proceeded, with its aid, to further investigation. The captain's first care was to establish himself in a chair in the shop, as president of the solemn tribunal that was sitting within him, and to require Rob to lie down in his bed under the counter, show exactly where he discovered the keys and packet when he awoke, how he found the door when he went to try it, how he started off to Brig Plus cautiously preventing the latter imitation from being carried farther than the threshold, and so on to the end of the chapter. When all this had been done several times, the captain shook his head and seemed to think the matter had a bad look. Next, the captain, with some indistinct idea of finding a body, instituted a strict search over the whole house, groping in the cellars with a lighted candle, thrusting his hook behind doors, bringing his head into violent contact with beams, and covering himself with cobwebs. Mounting up to the old man's bedroom, they found that he had not been in bed on the previous night, but had merely lain down on the coverlet, as was evident from the impression yet remaining there. "And I think, Captain," apostrophe said Rob, looking round the room, "that when Mr. Gills was going in and out so often these last few days, he was taking little things away, piecemeal, not to attract attention." Apostrophe A. Apostrophe apostrophe said the captain, mysteriously. "Why so, my lad?" Apostrophe Y. Apostrophe returned Rob, looking about. "I don't see his shaving tackle. Nor his brushes, Captain. Nor no shirts. Nor yet his shoes." Apostrophe As each of these articles was mentioned, Captain Cuttle took particular notice of the corresponding department of the grinder, lest he should appear to have been in recent use, or should prove to be in present possession thereof. But Rob had no occasion to shave, was not brushed, and wore the clothes he had on for a long time past, beyond all possibility of a mistake. "And what should you say," apostrophe said the captain, "not committing yourself about his time of shearing off?" "Hey?" Apostrophe Why, "I think, Captain," apostrophe returned Rob, "that he must have gone pretty soon after I began to snore." Apostrophe What o'clock was that? Apostrophe apostrophe said the captain, prepared to be very particular about the exact time. "How can I tell, Captain?" Apostrophe apostrophe answered Rob. "I only know that I'm a heavy sleeper at first, and a light one towards morning. And if Mr. Gills had come through the shop near daybreak, though ever so much on tiptoe, I'm pretty sure I should have heard him shut the door at all events." On mature consideration of this evidence, Captain Cuttle began to think that the instrument maker must have vanished of his own accord, to which logical conclusion he was assisted by the letter addressed to himself, which, as being undeniably in the old man's handwriting, would seem, with no great forcing, to bear the construction that he arranged of his own will to go, and so went. The captain had next to consider where, and why. And as there was no way whatsoever that he saw to the solution of the first difficulty, he confined his meditations to the second. Remembering the old man's curious manner, and the farewell he had taken of him, unaccountably fervent at the time, but quite intelligible now, a terrible apprehension strengthened on the captain, that, overpowered by his anxieties and regrets for Walter, he had been driven to commit suicide. Unequal to the wear and tear of daily life, as he had often professed himself to be, and shaken as he no doubt was by the uncertainty and deferred hope he had undergone, it seemed no violently strained misgiving, but only too probable. Free from debt, and with no fear for his personal liberty, or the seizure of his goods, what else but such a state of madness could have hurried him away alone and secretly? As to his carrying some apparel with him, if he had really done so, and they were not even sure of, that he might have done so, the captain argued, to prevent inquiry, to distract attention from his probable fate, or to ease the very mind that was now revolving all these possibilities. Such, reduced into plain language, and condensed within a small compass, was the final result and substance of Captain Cuttle's deliberations, which took a long time to arrive at this pass, and were, like some more public deliberations, very discursive and disorderly. Dejected and despondent in the extreme, Captain Cuttle felt it just to release Rob from the arrest in which he had placed him, and to enlarge him, subject to a kind of honorable inspection which he still resolved to exercise, and having hired a man from Broglie the broker to sit in the shop during their absence, the captain, taking Rob with him, issued forth upon a dismal quest after the mortal remains of Solomon Gills. Not a station house, or bone house, or workhouse in the metropolis escaped a visitation from the hard glazed hat. Along the wharves, among the shipping on the bank side, up the river, down the river, here, there, everywhere, it went gleaming where men were thickest, like the hero's helmet in an epic battle. For a whole week the captain read of all the found and missing people in all the newspapers and handbills, and went forth on expeditions at all hours of the day to identify Solomon Gills in poor little ship boys who had fallen overboard, and in tall foreigners with dark beards who had taken poison to make sure, apostrophe Captain Cuttle said, that it whammed him. Apostrophe it is a sure thing, that it never was, and that the good captain had no other satisfaction. Captain Cuttle at last abandoned these attempts as hopeless, and set himself to consider what was to be done next. After several new perusals of his poor friend's letter, he considered that the maintenance of a home in the old place for Walter was the primary duty imposed upon him. Therefore, the captain's decision was that he would keep house on the premises of Solomon Gills himself, and would go into the instrument business, and see what came of it. But as this step involved the relinquishment of his apartments at Mrs. McStinger's, and he knew that resolute woman would never hear of his deserting them, the captain took the desperate determination of running away. Now, looky here, my lad, apostrophe said the captain to Rob, when he had matured this notable scheme, tomorrow, I shan't be found in this here roadstead till night, not till arter midnight perhaps. But you keep watch till you hear me knock, and the moment you do, turn to, and open the door. Apostrophe, very good, captain, apostrophe said Rob. You'll continue to be rated on these here books, apostrophe pursued the captain condescendingly, and I don't say, but what you may get promotion, if you and me should pull together with a will. But the moment you hear me knock tomorrow night, whatever time it is, turn to and show yourself smart with the door. Apostrophe, I'll be sure to do it, captain, apostrophe replied Rob. Because you understand, apostrophe resumed the captain, coming back again to enforce this charge upon his mind, there may be, for anything I can say, a chase, and I might be took, while I was waiting, if you didn't show yourself smart with the door. Apostrophe, Rob again assured the captain, that he would be prompt and wakeful, and the captain having made this prudent arrangement, went home to Mrs. McStinger's for the last time. The sense the captain had of its being the last time, and of the awful purpose hidden beneath his blue waistcoat, inspired him with such a mortal dread of Mrs. McStinger, that the sound of that lady's foot downstairs at any time of the day, was sufficient to throw him into a fit of trembling. It fell out, too, that Mrs. McStinger was in a charming temper, mild and placid as a house lamb. And Captain Cuttle's conscience suffered terrible twinges when she came up to inquire if she could cook him nothing for his dinner. A nice small kidney pudding now, Captain Cuttle, apostrophe said his landlady. Or a sheep's heart. Don't mind my trouble. Apostrophe, no thankee, ma'am, apostrophe returned the captain. Have a roast fowl, apostrophe said Mrs. McStinger, with a bit of wheel. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.